So why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Anne Kavoukian, and I'm presently leading the Privacy by Design Center of Excellence at Ryerson University. And Privacy by Design is something I developed a long time ago while I was Privacy Commissioner of Ontario, which I was for three terms. I'm the only one who stuck it out for three terms. And the reason I introduced Privacy by Design, I created it, was because, see, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a psychologist. That's my background. I studied psychology and the law. And I wanted to build a model of prevention, much like a medical model of prevention, where you could prevent the privacy harms from arising, not just address them through regulatory compliance. I just wanted to get rid of them. I didn't want them to be created. So that's why I took a design approach to it by embedding privacy into the design of our operations, bake it into the code, into the data architecture, into all that we do.
Today, I'm thrilled to have Anne with us on the show to talk about how you could use privacy to differentiate your business. Look, with the GDPR deployment behind us, maybe you're breathing a sigh of relief. On the other hand, maybe you see it and all of the changes it's brought about as just another hassle. Yep, just another regulation to comply with to help keep people's data secure. But does it have to be that way? What if your company recognized that there's strategic value and differentiation in data privacy and in becoming a company that people actually trust, a company that values privacy as much as they value you being their customer? Well, that's what today's episode is all about. Anne and I are going to dig into trust, privacy by design, and how this potential hassle is actually an opportunity. Look, customers always have a choice to stay with your company, go to a competitor, or just walk away. Well, you know which one you want. It's going to be a great show, so stick around. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Georgian Impact Podcast. Thanks for being here, Anne. It's great to have you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So in my prep for this podcast, I actually went back and I acquired a copy of your 2002 book, Privacy Payoff, How Successful Businesses Build Customer Trust.
Yes.
I opened it up and to my surprise, it was actually signed. And your inscription said, and I quote, "To anonymous, for reasons too private to mention, here's to privacy now. Best regards, Anne." Do you write this in every book you sign, or what? I'd have to ask what?
I try to come up with different things so that we can, you know, make it a little interesting depending on who gets it. So I forgot that one. Actually, I'm delighted you have it.
That was very cool. So it's very neat. So anyway, very clear to all of us that more data is being collected, not less. And I was actually a little flabbergasted on a recent New York Times article on these 9 new Facebook patents, but they include. They could infer your relationship status by, you know, where you've been. They could predict life changes. They're doing more analysis around your media consumption pattern, even to the point of notifying you or understanding when your normal routine has been deviated. So, you know, we don't know what they're going to do with this, if anything, but I'd love to hear your thoughts about on how consumer awareness might have changed. Do people care?
People do care. People care more than ever before. I've been in this business well over 20 years. I've never seen concern for privacy in terms of the public opinion polls consistently at the 90 percentile. 90% of those polled in Pew Internet Research and other public opinion polls, 92% of those polled have huge concern for privacy and the loss of control over their data, and they don't know what to do about it. And what accompanies that is an all-time low in terms of trust. So there's huge concern for privacy, very little trust, and people don't know what to do about it. So a lot of the public speaking that I do, a lot of the stuff I do with the media is trying to tell them small measures in terms of things that they can do. And my biggest pitch, though, is to companies and telling them, for God's sakes, embed privacy into the design of your operations. And when you do, shout it from the rooftops. Tell your customers the lengths you're going to protect their privacy, the respect you have for them, and it will pay off big time because you will gain a competitive advantage by doing so. People will reward you with their repeat business, their loyalty, and it will attract new opportunity. That's what we've got to do.
Very cool. Now, so we're on, I think, a good journey. And you mentioned that people could take small incremental steps. I actually was on Facebook the other day, and they were giving me an option to update my status or their facial recognition option. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to me because they say, click here to go to your settings. And I'm on the facial recognition setting. But they don't really want me to turn it off because they said, if you turn this off, we won't recognize your face. And now we won't be able to capture a bad guy who's using your face for bad things.
Scare
and
people.
I just took a breath and said, really?
Yeah. The lengths they will go to preserve the data they have in personally identifiable form. And that's why I just think there's just so much deception taking place in so many arenas to scare people to reveal their personally identifiable data. And if you don't, horrible things will happen. It's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. And we just have to educate people that you can still use the services you want. You can search for things. You know, there's DuckDuckGo, which is a wonderful search engine.
Yep, I use it.
I use it too. You know, and it doesn't tell the world what you're searching for. I mean, if you know, maybe you're searching for something sensitive, some kind of treatment for a medical condition or whatever. It's nobody else's business. That's what I want people to take away from this. The privacy, it's all about control. It's about personal control on the part of the individual relating to their data. It's their data. And so if you want to give it away, be my guest. You know, I tell people privacy is not a religion. You want to give away your information, by all means. I would never stand in your way as long as you do so knowingly. Because you see, it's only the individual who knows the context associated with the information and the sensitivity or lack thereof. Nobody else knows that.
Sure. So I think we're not at the point, although there was a little bit of, in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica stuff, there was the hashtag delete Facebook campaign. I'm not sure that had a meaningful impact. We still need to see companies kind of step up and do more, right?
Absolutely. But I read recently that 40% of Facebook users were at the very least reviewing and restricting who had access to their data. So they're going into Facebook, and they're narrowing the massive amount of information that's flowing out. I'll never forget, a few years ago, I was at a conference, an IAPP conference, and I was about to give a talk, and I ran into Erin Egan, who's the chief privacy officer at Facebook, and she said, oh, are you coming to my session on how we're doing privacy by design at Facebook? I'm going to give you a shout out. And I said, oh, thank you very much, but I've got my own session. And now I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You're doing privacy by design at Facebook? Or over my dead body. I mean, it's not what I call privacy by design.
Oh, it comes down to trust. So there was a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision that actually supported some privacy protections. So a little more restrictions in terms of vacuuming up some metadata. Do you think we're going in the right direction with public sector yet?
It's certainly in the right direction. The recent Supreme Court decision in the U.S. was wonderful, which said the police, they've got to get a warrant before they can routinely access the personal, your location data off of your mobile phone. That's huge because they've been accessing it everywhere. They go to the telcos and they just take whatever they want. They won't be able to do that anymore. It's the same here in Canada. So I think it's very important to point that out. I actually have a greater concern with surveillance on the part of the public sector than the private sector, because you can take your business elsewhere. You don't like what a company's doing with your information, you go somewhere else. You can't do that with the government. You know, they're it. And they have enormous power, enormous, and massive capacity for surveillance. So I think we need to have very strong oversight, independent oversight over what the government does, and call them out on everything that violates basic privacy premises.
Well, we do have, I guess there was some skirmishes with Google and Facebook where the employees complaining about government contracts.
Yes.
So I think maybe that's a little bit of a trend, and the companies are reacting because their employees are their lifeblood. So that's
I was
progress.
Really pleased about that, because even Amazon employees apparently recently objected to the way they're going to be using their biometrics, the way they're pushing that out on Amazon. So it's great that employees of these major companies are speaking out against certain practices that clearly fly in the face of privacy.
Super. And maybe just to close this piece out, kind of maybe it's probably not fair to say this mirrors GDPR in the US, but today the day we're recording this, June 21st, I'm sure this will be out probably in August, but there is a vote today on the California Consumer Privacy Act of 2018. And I love the fact that tech companies will have to disclose the categories of data they collect, almost going back to those patents of Facebook we spoke about earlier. So this will be interesting to see where this goes and who they share the information with. Could be very interesting.
Fingers crossed today in California. I'm just praying it goes through. I mean, it's huge. And the GDPR, obviously, it doesn't impact the U.S. directly, but it is having an impact. There's no question. Because everyone, U.S., Canadian businesses, we all want to do business with the EU and be able to freely exchange data. And we won't be able to do that unless we're considered to be adequate in terms of the provisions of our respective countries. I have never had more calls from companies as I have recently, US, for example, companies that want to demonstrate that they're doing privacy by design, which, as you know, is a part of the GDPR. And for that, you don't need a regulation. You don't need a law. You just have to follow the seven foundational principles. So they're calling me to say, we want to at least show good faith to the EU that we're doing privacy by design. And since this arose, I've been offering privacy by design certification because companies want to be certified to demonstrate they're really doing it.
So I want to get to that, build to privacy by design, a little bit of self-evaluation. So we've been warned by you and others, we've been warned by you for a long time. I mean, 1998, you and Don Tapscott wrote the book on safeguarding in the network world. Obviously, my inscripted book, 2002, Privacy Path, was pretty cool. So my sense is you weren't happy enough, and that's what drove you to develop the privacy by design principles. What else drove you to do that?
You know what drove me? As I said, I'm a psychologist. That's my background. And I thought it was crazy that we would simply allow privacy harms to continue and in fact grow. In this day and age of ubiquitous computing, massive online connectivity, social media abounding, I just thought there's no way if we just deal with the problems, the data breaches, the privacy infractions after the fact, there's no way we're going to have a handle on this in terms of any kind of regulatory compliance. And that view obviously was agreed upon by the privacy commissioners and data protection authorities who in 2010 unanimously passed privacy by design as an international standard. And most of the privacy commissioners are lawyers. I call them lawyers, brilliant lawyers who love drilling down into section 39 sub 2 part A and applying that to the fact situation. But after I spoke to them, because it was unanimously passed and I inquired, they, like me, they understood that all we were seeing was the tip of the iceberg in terms of the privacy harms, that the majority of the data breaches, privacy harms, privacy issues were evading our detection and evading any possibility of being regulated. So they said, we have to revert to a model of prevention, much like what you had in mind. As a psychologist, that's what I always want to do. I want to identify the risks and then build in measures that can prevent them from happening. It's my background.
So I'll cherry pick some of the principles. Obviously, the first principle of being proactive, not reactive, holds true. But I'd like to just focus on number two, which is privacy is your default setting. And in light of Cambridge Analytica versus the GDPR, where do you see companies are? Do you think companies are there yet? Or people beginning to demand it? I'm fascinated by your data point about 40% of Facebook users did update their settings. What do you think we are on getting privacy as a default setting?
Privacy as the default is absolutely critical. And as you know, it's been included specifically in the GDPR. And it's the exact opposite, John, of what's going on now, which is if you want to preserve your privacy after you've bought something online or ordered something, you are expected to go through all the legalese and the terms of service and all the details in the privacy policy to find the opt-out box that says, do not use my information for any purpose other than the primary purpose intended for the data collection. We know nobody does that. It's because life is too damn short. We don't have time to do that. But it doesn't mean that people don't want it. Privacy as the default is the exact opposite. It's a game changer. It says to people, don't worry. You don't have to ask for privacy. It's built in automatically as the default. We give it to you. So when you order something or purchase something online or whatever, we will only be able to use your information for the purpose intended, the reason you gave it to us. You don't give us your information and say, do whatever the heck you want with it. No, you give it to fulfill a particular purpose. We can only use it for that purpose. And down the road, if we want to use it for a secondary use, we're going to come back to you and obtain your positive consent. Total game changer from black to white. And the beauty of this is why I tell companies privacy is so good for your business. When you do privacy as the default like that, it builds trust dramatically. Your customers begin to trust you. And once you have that trusted business relationship, they're then happy to say yes to you when you come back to them and ask them for additional consent. They always say yes. There's no issue. It builds trust and grows your business.
So not just privacy is the fault, but it's followed by shouted from the rooftops.
Absolutely. I always tell people to do that because you don't want to stay quiet about protecting people's privacy and the gifts you're giving them by doing so. You want to make sure they know about it. And you do that very respectfully. People love hearing about it, first of all. I've been told that repeatedly. And they then feel much more comfortable engaging in some kind of dialogue with you about other issues and other questions they may have and information they may want to share with you. So it opens up a whole new venue, and it's to your advantage to do that.
Perfect follow-up. You talk about a positive sum of security and privacy as a trade-off. And I love that, a couple of weeks ago, Mary Meeker's report says tech companies are faced with this privacy paradox, you know, using data to provide a better customer experience versus violating consumer privacy. So my sense is this is going to drive kind of this product design piece, getting privacy into the product design piece. Again, just the question, where do you think we're going to be in terms of getting this to be a norm? Equifax just got away without having penalties. They're just going to change their product. What do you think it's going to take to get this kind of done before the fact versus after the fact?
But also there's Equifax and others. There's lawsuits and there are class action lawsuits against these companies. So it's not that there's no reprisal. There is. I think it'll take a year or two to get this message across. Zero sum, the either or trade-off model is so deeply embedded in, it seems like, all of our operations that it will take some time to change that. And I think part of the problem is they don't understand that you can have both. You can have positive sum, get rid of the either or win-lose model and substitute and privacy and fill in the blank. And they've never actually considered that. I've talked to so many businesses and I tell them, I want you to have both. It's not that I want you to have a trade-off at all. You can have multiple gains and your customers will also win. And they say, really? You're kidding me. No. And then I give them examples of how you can do it. And you see, privacy and data utility. You can have massive uses of data if you use strong de-identification protocols combined with a risk of re-identification framework. You can reduce the risk of re-identification to less than 0.05%. That's huge. That's like less than the likelihood of being hit by lightning if you go outside and it's raining out. So that's an acceptable risk. People say, well, there's no such thing as zero risk. I said, of course not. I talk about the myth of zero risk all the time, but you don't need to bring it down to zero. In my view, there's no zero risk anywhere in the world. But sure, if you reduce it dramatically, the likelihood of that risk is so slim that it's quite acceptable.
Excellent. That's a great way to look at it and realize we don't need any more near deaths of companies and targets,
right,
monies. We just get it right early on. So one element then, as we go kind of going through the design principles in terms of visibility, transparency, keeping it open, it all kind of wraps up in the last one, which is respect for user privacy.
Yes.
So let's talk about what it really means to put the user first.
You know, we could have started with that as the first principle. I always say that. What I found with companies that are user-centric, it changes their entire mindset, the way they approach a problem. They always start with, are there any implications to the user, to our customers, in terms of how we're going to be using their information? Will it be made publicly available in ways that were never intended? It reforms the whole practice. And then it leads to something, I often call it a data map. I tell companies, do you have a data map? Meaning, do you know how identifiable data flows throughout your organization. You collect it for the primary purpose intended, totally acceptable. Then what happens to it? Does it go to any other departments in your organization? Is it used for any secondary uses that have not been consented to? When you map that out, it clarifies everything beautifully, and it inhales the user-centric philosophy into your operations.
I love that. I hadn't really thought about it. That really is the best way to understand, from a best practice for a company. That data map is something I hadn't really thought about. It really is a great way to think about how you're impacting different parts of the product, what you're doing with it, and then it then makes it that much easier to communicate it back to the end users in terms of being transparent.
Exactly. So again, there's that feedback loop and it becomes this win-win proposition. And it also shows your customers very clearly the lengths you're going to respect their privacy. And that will, you will be rewarded for that again and again.
So if we have, you know, recognize that this is differentiations for a company, that they're going to be more competitive, they'll do a better job of satisfying their users. We are really getting to the point of the strategic nature of this. This has to become not just a top-down policy, but this issue of privacy has to begin to permeate the entire culture of a company.
Totally, totally. It's from top to bottom. That's why I always start with the CEOs in a company. Once I get their buy-in, then you go throughout, I was going to say, you go right to the beginning, to the frontline staff, and work your way up. Because everyone has to understand why you're doing it. Because at first, it may seem like a pain. Why are we doing this? We've been doing it this other way forever. You have to explain it to them and explain that it is not more labor intensive. It's just a different mindset in terms of your approach. And I've never had the experience where at the end of doing this, there's been a negative result. It always leads to positives. And it also has to be an ongoing process. So I tell them, it's like a chess game. It's like point, counterpoint. Because in terms of the security you need associated with the protection of the data, as you know, there's sort of massive daily cybersecurity attacks. You've got to have very strong security in place, and you need to make sure that it operates in a way that is compatible with what you have in mind. So constant review and concern for privacy just permeates throughout the entire system.
So in addition to you and I using the same private search engine, I'm not ready, and I think my friends, well, my techie friends think I'm a little nuts, but I'm not ready to put in a Nest or a Ring in my home.
Oh, thank
God. I haven't
God.
Seen clear messages yet on what they're doing, both to protect my data and how they're using the data. I'm still waiting for that. So what should a company do to get our business?
Well, they should, first of all, demonstrate that it, with the Nests and other, here we're talking about Internet of Things, connected devices, et cetera. And I've been saying for years, it's like the Wild West. They're so excited to get the product out the door. They're rushing out the door without building virtually any privacy and security into these products. It is appalling. Not only all the data breaches that are happening, but all of the, you know, there was a story just a few weeks ago, I was doing media interviews on it, where I think it was Alexa Echo, where it picked up the personal conversation of this couple, and it somehow related to one of their contacts. Now, thank God the contact, you know, didn't then send it to the media, but the point is, they were shocked. And I'm saying to people, do you really want, you know, the sweet nothings you're saying to your spouse, the personal conversations you're having with your children? My God, do you want that ever to possibly go public? And the other thing, I just learned about this last week, and I was appalled by it, and even I hadn't thought of this. Smart devices in the home, connected devices, are being used as instruments of domestic abuse. Can you believe this?
I just read that myself. Yeah,
oh my God.
Shocking.
So it turns out it's usually the men who have the passwords and run the technology on these connected devices. When they break up and they leave and they're mad, they do horrible things to their wives through these connected devices. I was reading about this one woman, her doorbell, she couldn't get it to stop ringing. It was ringing all the time. And another one, it's in the middle of the summer, she'd put her air conditioning on. The thermostat went up to 100 degrees heat. She's dying of heat and she's got the air conditioning on. What is it? The guy had increased it, the temperature setting, to 100 degrees in her house. Things like this are happening all the time. Video surveillance cameras are going nuts. And this is the horror of it. And honestly, these are safety issues I'd never even considered. So you got to be very careful when you use these devices. I'm now telling not just wives, everyone should know how to operate these things in their homes. They should have the passwords. And most important, they should know how to disable them.
Right. So let's take this, let's kind of just wrap this up again. You're right in terms of obviously making the consumers more intelligent, but I'm going to still lay this back on the companies in
yes.
terms of what their best practices might be. So let's just kind of wrap up and have you reiterate for me yeah. kind of some of the key company best practices.
You're absolutely right. And I do reference what individuals should do, but the responsibility has to lie with the companies. And first and foremost, they have to convey to all their employees the notion of primary purpose. There's two what are called fair information practices called purpose specification and use limitation, which means simply when you're collecting information from someone, you collect it for a particular purpose. You specify the purpose. I need your information, your credit card to complete the transaction, your home address to deliver the product to you, whatever. That's purpose specification. Then use limitation is you, the company, limit your use of the information to that primary purpose of the data collection. That's the only reason they gave you the information. And you restrict your use of the information to that purpose, unless down the road, if a secondary use comes up, you go back to your customer and you obtain additional consent for the secondary use. If you do that, you will be golden. It's embedding privacy into the design of your operations up front so that you will minimize the likelihood of data breaches, privacy harms, and you will keep your customers informed of the lengths you're going to protect their privacy by design, and they will thank you for it. So you make it a win-win operation. I want everyone to win, and we can do this.
I can't think of a better way to end it than on that point. That was fantastic. Anne, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You're very kind, John. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.